Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Oh, James Comey, the corrupt, the disgraced former FBI director. That guy can't even take a walk on the beach without disgracing himself anymore. My goodness. Wait, by the way, what beach was he on? Was he out on the beach with Joe Biden shuffling around, angry, just yelling at anybody that passed nearby? But, we've got some great conversations we're going to share with you here this morning in the 6 o'clock hour of the show. My conversation earlier this week with Gallatin County Sheriff Dan Springer. We're going to share that with you here in just a few minutes. And then Dr. Merdad Kia from the University of Montana recapping President Trump's historic trip to the Middle East. So that's what we're going to have for you here in the 6 o'clock hour. And then, of course, Becky Hillier, Freedom Friday, looking at the bright side coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the show. But Peter Ducey lays out the story about disgraced former FBI director calling to 86 Trump with some seashells on the beach. Come on now. Why does my computer not want to run all of a sudden? There we go.
And Laura, the real head scratcher about this very serious topic is that James Comey wants us to believe, and we have this photo here, that he saw a cool, these are his words, cool shell formation on my beach walk. And that cool shell formation, according to the person who used to be in charge of the FBI, shows shells in the shape of 8647. 86 is common restaurant lingo, of course, for denying service to somebody. But after about 30 seconds of Googling, you can see that a good chunk of people all around the world also associate 86 with needing to kill somebody. An old mob saying, basically, you take somebody 8 miles outside of town and then you put them 6 feet in the ground. James Comey, again, a guy who has prosecuted mobsters, apparently had no idea that this was a thing. He deleted the original post with the cool shell formation, and he writes, I posted a picture earlier of some shells I saw today on a beach walk, which I assumed were a political message. I didn't realize some folks associate those numbers with violence. It never occurred to me, but I oppose violence of any kind, and I took the post down. That's not enough for Donald Trump Jr. He says, just James Comey casually calling for my dad to be murdered. This is who the Dem media worships. Demented. And Kash Patel, as we were coming to air, the new FBI director, one of Comey's successors, is saying that he is in touch with the Secret Service, and they are going to be sending Secret Service agents to talk to James Comey about what exactly he was getting at.
Yeah, what a clown. What a corrupt clown, James Comey, the disgraced former FBI director. He claims, I didn't know what 8647 meant. Then why did you share it, man? See, now, I worked in the restaurant business in high school and college, so the term 86 for us was, you know, you're kicking somebody out. They can't come back to the restaurant ever again. But he didn't even give that explanation. He's like, I didn't know what it meant. That tells you that the guy is straight up lying. He meant it as the much more serious version. He basically was openly calling for killing the president of the United States. Not only should they interrogate this guy, but then they should charge him with federal charges for lying to federal investigators.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With breaks of sun and some cloudiness today, we'll see some scattered showers, a few thundershowers developing, mainly in the afternoon. High temperature readings will range from the upper 50s to the mid-60s. For tonight, some scattered showers possible early. Temperatures will then drop back off to the upper 30s in Bozeman to the mid-40s in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
A recent House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing examined the current state of the Navy and Marines. New Navy Secretary John Phelan testified the Navy remains the dominant maritime force in the world.
But that dominance is under threat. China continues to expand its fleet, build more advanced submarines, and operate more provocatively and aggressively in contested waters.
California Republican Ken Calvert added that
China is on pace to surpass the United States Navy in firepower in the coming years.
Secretary Phelan says the U.S. needs to act.
Rebuilding our hollowed-out maritime industrial base is a national security imperative.
Acting Chief of Naval Operations Admiral James Kilby acknowledged the challenges, but said one thing remains absolute.
We remain committed to a strong global Navy, one that is prepared to defend our homeland, deter our adversaries, and prevail in war.
Kevin Uletsky, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August.
Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Caden, let me know if your computer's not working in there to run that conversation there with Sheriff Springer. Okay, all right. Well, I was thinking we were going to play it from his production studio here. Let me see here. Oh, it was going. Okay, all right.
Explosive growth, even before COVID-19. Then COVID-19 kicks off, and boom, you get slammed with more people, which always typically means more crime. And then, now we're hearing from federal law enforcement that, there's about 1,000 illegal aliens in Montana, and the bulk of those are in your county. So it sounds like you've had a lot of work on your hands here in recent years.
That's correct. We're definitely seeing some unprecedented growth around here, and no question there's an illegal population for sure.
How would you paint the picture of the challenges facing you and your deputies, just say in the last four or five plus years just there in the Bozeman Gallatin County area?
Our primary with our growth that's happened, our primary concerns have been the increase in crime, and we have seen an increase in crime, and we're challenged by that every day. But by the same token, we're still one of the safest communities in Montana, and I know they're out there every day working their tails off to make sure this community stays safe. So absolutely, it is a concern of ours, and we know that as we talk about the illegal immigration process and the illegal immigrants here in Bozeman specifically, certainly been a lot of talk about the cartels and those kind of things over the years. And we're well aware of that. And we are doing, everything that we can from a law enforcement perspective to curtail those. And so I think I'm very impressed with the work that the guys have been doing.
Yeah, I know, in the last 4 years of the Biden administration, Stacey Zinn, who was the head of the DEA here in Montana at the time, I mean, she did a great job. Folks in Bozeman were having her go to Bozeman, do town hall meetings, because the people in Bozeman could see it. They could say, hey, we're starting to see graffiti. We're starting to see a different element here in town. And Stacey said, yes, the drug cartels are targeting Gallatin County. It started with cocaine. Then they added in the meth and the fentanyl, and then now we've had these Tren de Aragua Venezuela gangbangers recently arrested in Gallatin County as well. For you as sheriff, what's the difference been like, say, from a year ago to now in the cooperation with federal law enforcement?
Well, it's unquestionable. The federal law enforcement has placed more of an emphasis on the removal of certainly the criminal element when it comes to illegal immigration or illegal immigrants. So ICE has been certainly much more present and more available to local law enforcement all across the state. No question that this administration has put a higher emphasis on making these communities safer.
How much of the TDA, the Tren de Aragua, and the Mexican drug cartel threat would you say still remains in the area, or is it just tough to say?
They don't have a foothold in this area. We certainly know that there are cartel members. We do have many of them identified. There's even active cases on some of them. So we are, continuing to work through that. They don't have a toehold in this community. We do not have, organized gangs that you see maybe in larger cities and whatnot. But we certainly have our, body groups that are definitely identified with certainly different types of gangs throughout whether it's Serranos or Trende Aragua or whatever. But they're right now, I think that we are on top of it. But, as we have a growth of people that come in here who are used to seeing these types of gangs from wherever they've come from, they've talked to us quite a bit about, I drive around and I see this and I see these tattoos, I see these markings, and it's what I used to see from where I came from. So we're doing our best. We work with, our federal partners as well as our local partners to make sure that we are doing everything we can to get them removed, find crimes, drug cases, whatever case may be.
There was a great story in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle, I think, last fall, featuring you and Congressman Zinke kind of doing a ride along, a drive around, and you were kind of talking then about, okay, what's the game plan? What can local sheriffs do in cooperation with the feds to deal with this illegal alien crisis? And so it was great to see you looking forward, planning ahead back then, and then now being able to execute that. I spoke with Congressman Zinke yesterday, and he talked about, how he's been working with you and what a great job you're doing to address this issue. And, he said he reached out to Tom Homan, President Trump's border czar. And, initially the feds, were going to try to give a lower rate of reimbursement if they use jail space. And, and Congressman Zinke worked with Tom and got a commitment from Tom Homan to say, hey, no, let's give Gallatin County a good rate. Let's make sure we follow their standards, not just the federal standards. And so unfortunately, the Gallatin County commissioners rejected that deal. So what happens now moving forward when it comes to ICE and any potential illegal alien arrests in the valley?
Yeah, so I want to, try to make this clear. It's a fairly complicated issue. So today, if we arrest someone for, say, DUI, and it's deemed that they're, here in the country illegally, we take them to jail, we work through the DUI process. Through the booking process, it's determined that they are here illegally. ICE makes that determination. Gallatin County is still a partner with ICE, and they will put a hold, if ICE puts a hold on them, a 48-hour hold, that person, if they were to bond out on their DUI, that's when the hold takes effect. So as soon as they bond out, we hold them on the detainer that ICE has sent to us. That's a 48-hour detainer. ICE has the opportunity then to come down and remove that person for 48 hours. So you think of this in like a three-stage process. That would be the first stage. ICE then takes that person and they take them to a detention facility somewhere. And then the person goes to the court hearings and a determination is made of their deportation status.
All right, let's hold it right there. Yeah, thanks, Caden. We're going to pick up where we left off with Sheriff Dan Springer from Gallatin County coming up right after the Farm and Ranch Report. And then Dr. Merdad Kia on President Trump's historic Middle East trip.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Perhaps it all just comes down to language. American trade deficits are something many of us aren't proud of, and our current president is determined to address. But what if we called them capital spending surpluses instead? When we buy more goods from a country that they import from us, the net result is that they have more dollars and we have more stuff. What do they do with the money? The answer is buy capital goods from us. In some cases, that's financial capital. Think corporate bonds or federal government debt. Could be real estate capital, or could be physical equipment like shuttle loader facilities in the Golden Triangle. And it's almost certainly equity on Wall Street, ownership shares of businesses large and small. Many of these things are good, or at least they could be, especially if those investments are used to grow businesses here. In the case of the federal borrowing, it's less clear, since debt purchases by foreigners just prop up deficit spending. That capital spending happens here because we remain a good place to invest. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. We're in the interlude between the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. Derby winner Sovereignty isn't running in the Preakness coming up in Baltimore, but House Republicans aren't skipping out on trying to finish the big, beautiful bill. And if this were a horse race, House Speaker Mike Johnson would dare the pony players to bet against House Republicans. Stop doubting us. We're going to get the job done, said Johnson. House Republicans aren't exactly maidens here, but the morning line might suggest that House Republicans are due to lose in this sweepstakes. Like the Triple Crown, there are three stages to this legislative tournament. It was a photo finish in February when House Republicans barely adopted the framework for the tax cut and spending reduction measure. The House GOP leadership appeared to make the vote a late scratch, with members fleeing the Capitol, only to have them recalled to the House chamber moments later. It was a repeat in April when Republicans got the second framework across the finish line by a nose. But House Republicans are barely a furlong into the race. It's like running on a sloppy track. And the next few weeks will be a wild ride. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Everybody, it's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nimitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, this week, ag lenders met in Torrington for the Wyoming Ag Bankers Conference, and Ag Committee Chair Quinn Hunter from Pinnacle Bank Wyoming in Torrington says that the conference is a very important information tool for ag lenders.
You know, it's great to kind of get some new resources from around the state, kind of see some of the challenges that other lenders are maybe facing, whether that's, you know, this part of the state's dry, other parts of the state super wet. And so it's kind of neat to hear some of the different perspectives. Markets are always changing annually, so it's good to kind of keep up to date. Cattle, hay markets, especially here in Wyoming, row crops as well.
He says even though cattle producers are enjoying record high prices, it's a little more challenging for farmers, especially with lower prices and the lack of a new farm bill.
You know, I would say a little bit more regulations, a little bit more under the microscope, unfortunately. But, you know, I'm an ag producer myself and grew up doing that. Know my customers very well. And no matter what, they seem to persevere through. And so even though it's tightened up a little bit, I'd say everyone's still doing pretty well considering the circumstances they're under.
He offers this advice for producers to help ag lenders better serve their financial needs.
You know, it definitely helps a lender out if you have all your numbers down. One of our speakers yesterday said, you know, it's funny with an ag producer, they know what their expenses are for their taxes, but they don't necessarily know their expenses for their cash flow. And so knowing that information helps us a ton when you're asking to borrow some more money.
And Quinn also talked with me about today's higher interest rates.
Yeah, you know, I think initially as lenders, we all kind of panicked. You know, we're going to have these uncomfortable conversations. And it's kind of the older generation that went through the 80s that maybe didn't panic as much as maybe my generation has with some of these higher rates. It's definitely been a challenge. I think we're all anticipating rates to start coming down. We hope they do for a lot of various reasons, especially in the ag sector. But it's definitely caused some difficult conversations and some different times and different planning.
Again, that was the Wyoming Bankers Association's Ag Committee Chair Quinn Hunter with Pinnacle Bank Wyoming in Torrington. Cattle producers join the Montana Stock Growers Association for its mid-year meeting headed for Butte this year, May 28th through the 30th. Highlights include a summer weather outlook from climatologist Brian Bledsoe, an ag policy and update from D.C. with NCBA's Vice President Kim Brackett of Idaho, plus a market outlook from Cattle Facts. And don't forget about the Montana Stock Growers Foundation's Sunset Banquet. Join us in Butte, May 28th through the 30th. For more information and to register, visit mtbeef.com.
Do rising interest rates have you concerned? Hi, I'm Blake Hotman. At Montana Livestock Ag Credit, we provide operating loans, term loans, and long-term fixed real estate loans to farmers and ranchers across Montana. Our rates are consistently lower than the competition, with no loan fees on operating and term loans. Montana Livestock is here to keep more money in your pocket. Give us a call at 1-800-332-3405 to talk to one of our officers or look us up at ag-credit.com.
Well, Mexico's president isn't too happy with the Trump administration's decision to suspend all imports of Mexican cattle, bison, and equine imports for 15 days because of ongoing detections of New World screwworm in shipments. Regardless, though, the U.S. livestock industry is applauding Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins' decision this past Sunday to do so to protect the industry here at home. For the Western Ag Network, I'm Russell Nimitz.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
There talks about them being full, Yellowstone County. Everybody knows the problem there. It's kind of, yeah, so you've actually got some space.
So I do have some space. I have, you know, I run about 165, 168 average. I have a 200-bed facility, and I will run up to 185, 190, but for the most part, we have the space. We have definitely have the capacity operationally, definitely have the capacity bed space-wise. So what the ICE is needing, they need a place to hold people. So the second stage of this, as I described, where they go to a detention facility and waiting for their court hearing, typically those detention facilities are very short term, also within 72 hours to a week. So what they were looking for was 10 beds that would just be guaranteed so they could bring people from not just my jurisdiction, but from other places. If someone gets arrested in Billings on a DUI, bonds out, they put an ICE hold on them, they pick them up, they bring them to Gallatin County for a couple of, couple of days, and then they move down to Salt Lake or Las Vegas for their court hearing. That's what they were needing. So that would be considered like the second stage of this. And so that's what I brought forward to the commissioners. I have to give the commissioners credit. They were willing to listen. They had some very reasonable questions, some concerns that they had, brought those back to ICE, kind of working through the contract piece of that. And then, I believe that they were, there was a lot of political pressure. There was probably definitely a legal opinion that was probably contrary to standard operating procedures, best practices around the country. I talked a lot about liability and things and unconstitutionalities, and I think it swayed them a little bit, and they made their decisions, and I have to respect that. I do have a good relationship with my commissioners. We typically work very well together, but we don't always see eye to eye when it comes to criminal events. But I am the sheriff. I am voted for this, and it's a professional job. We're well aware of the consequences. The problem now is that when ICE doesn't have any place to detain these people for longer periods of time, they will be released back into the communities, and that makes our communities less safe.
Yeah, and that's what happened last year, because the Biden regime would basically just release all these people. Oftentimes, that's why I remember seeing there was a guy arrested by Border Patrol. I think it was up near Whitefish, I think, or maybe he was picked up in Idaho, but he was picked up on a failure to appear charge. So what that tells us is, okay, he was an illegal alien who committed a crime. I believe it was a DUI in the Bozeman area, and then they put him back out on the streets and gave him a notice to appear before a judge. Well, an illegal alien who committed a crime breaking into this country and then committed more crimes. Yeah, like he's going to honor a judge's, would you show up on this date request? All right. Yeah, thankfully, Gallatin County Sheriff Dan Springer is able to stick around with us for a few more minutes here as we round up the hour. Sheriff, hey, first off, 30 years you've been in law enforcement there at the Gallatin County Sheriff's Office, first as a deputy. In fact, we had a great phone call last week from former, I mentioned Sheriff Slaughter, the current sheriff in Cascade County. He's the son of former Gallatin County Sheriff Slaughter, and we got a great phone call from him last week. But yeah, 30 years you've been doing this. We were talking during the break. For people who care about due process, this is the due process. This has been the standard process. ICE holds, working with ICE for illegal. This is the standard process. This is the due process. If you claim to support due process, we should be doing everything we can to work with ICE.
Absolutely. This is the beginning stages of that. And, this process has been the exact same process for the last 30 years plus. Doesn't matter what administration has been, even in the Biden administration. Now, they were, there was less emphasis on it, but the process was the exact same. So this is process-wise, nothing has changed. We do need to have the opportunity to get people through the court systems and through the deportation process, but they need to have places to hold them. Otherwise, you're releasing criminals back into your community and making your communities less safe, and that's not acceptable to me.
Yeah. What do you see kind of as the battle ahead at this point? I mean, you talk about continuing to work with ICE. Could you see where some in the county might resist efforts to deport just the everyday illegal aliens, like in the Border Patrol, because they've got authority up in, a certain radius of the northern border. So the Border Patrol Spokane sector and Havre sector, they've been in Big Fork, for example, they went on a job site and arrested several illegal aliens there. What a lot of people are telling me is, man, they could have a field day in the Big Sky area if they did the same thing there. But obviously Border Patrol doesn't have authority. It would have to be an ICE operation. But could you see local elements trying to resist that from happening?
I'd say there's no question there's a group of people that would be interested in resisting that. But as long as I'm the sheriff, we're going to follow the law. And that is in cooperation with ICE. So I don't foresee us continuing to have a problem with our ICE holds. The problem is if ICE doesn't have a place to take them, they're going to have to release them. So I have been working, I've reached out to a couple of different sheriffs about the possibility of taking a little heat off of them with their DOC inmates. Because one of the things that I had worked on with this ICE hold thing was, you know, the Department of Corrections in Montana is also kind of busting at the seams, which means the locals are holding a lot more of their inmates. Now, DOC has been really good lately in the last 6 months about removing DOC inmates at a faster pace and putting them into their system. However, there's still plenty of them that are sitting at the local facilities. I worked with the DOC, and they said, yes, we will prioritize you, make sure we get some DOC out to make sure that you continue to have room for ICE beds. Well, given that, you know, we've been kind of told they're not going to allow me to do this contract now, that's fine, and they have the authority to make that decision, I guess, but there are always consequences to those types of decisions. But in this particular case, when I'm reaching out to other sheriffs and saying, let me take some of your DOC inmates that, you know, are sitting there too long, and then maybe you guys can work on contracts with your communities and see if you can make a space for ICE beds. So I've worked with, talked to ICE about this, a few other sheriffs, and maybe that's in the works now. So there's always, I believe strongly that there's always a solution. And whenever someone puts barriers in front of you, there's always opportunity, and it's, you know, you got to work on solutions.
I met a great guy there in Bozeman. He created a little cigar humidor out of ammo cans. And the company is called FITFO, which is an acronym for figure it the F out. It sounds like something you just got to do every day. You just got to figure it the F out one way or another, right? Pardon my acronym French.
There's an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, yep. Sheriff Springer, great to have you on the show. Big thanks to you and your deputies for all the work that you do. I know last year when I was doing events across the state, I ran into some of your deputies, and man, the workload I know has just been intense, but we appreciate all you do, especially here during National Police Week and recognizing law enforcement this week. Really a special salute to all of you.
Thank you very much, and certainly remembering, you know, our fallen deputy, Jake Allmendinger, and a special time for us to remember all of that. So thank you.
Amen. God bless his family and fellow law enforcement members. All right, Sheriff, appreciate your time.
All right, yeah, and coming up after the next break, our conversation with Dr. Merdad Kia. He is the expert on the Middle East. He's at the University of Montana. Great guy. He's been one of the top professors there, according to the students from Montana over a number of years. So he weighed in on the president's Middle East trip. I'll have the latest updates on that and more later on in the 7 o'clock hour of the show as well. And then, of course, Freedom Friday with George Blackard in the 8 o'clock hour. So a lot to come for you here on this Friday.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Dr. Merdad Kia from the University of Montana, he is the expert on the Middle East, one of the experts for our entire country, let alone here in Montana. Dr. Kia, great to have you back on the show. How would you summarize what you're seeing already?
Aaron, it's a true privilege to be with you and your listeners. This is truly a moment to remember. This is a historic moment. First of all, the president has achieved a great deal by signing new agreements with Saudi Arabia. And he will be signing new agreements with Qatar and United Arab Emirates. I think the biggest surprise in the trip to Saudi Arabia was also lifting sanctions on Syria, which was celebrated greatly in the entire region, except one country, remember, that would be the Islamic Republic of Iran, which denounced the lifting of sanctions as an aggression, which is truly absurd. But I think the lifting of sanctions on Syria was based on an understanding that Syria would moderate its stand and eventually would join the Abraham Accord and recognize the existence of a Jewish state called Israel. That would be a dream coming true.
Yeah, this isn't just about a path to peace in the Middle East between all these Arab countries, getting us back on that path that President Trump put us on in his first term with Israel and all these Arab countries. It's a path to diplomacy. It's a path to economic prosperity for the United States and these Gulf countries. But it's also about putting Tehran and the terrorist regime there in a pinch, which I know you long to see, you know, the land you grew up in to be free one day from the terrorist regime there. Talk, too, about Turkey and the Turkish role in all everything that's going on right now. I know a lot of people are saying, hey, they're very concerned about the leadership in Syria. You've expressed your concerns about the new leadership in Syria. However, you know, talk about why you think this is a good move. I understand, you know, the Turks are kind of backing off on the Kurds as well. The Kurds are good friends of the Americans, and so the Turks are backing off on the Kurds as well.
Yes, that's correct. And as you know, something even more amazing took place last week, which is the main Kurdish organization in Turkey, the PKK, Kurdish Workers' Party, or Kurdistan Workers' Party, more correctly, denounced any form of violence and terrorism and agreed to negotiate with the government of Turkey as long as the Turkish government recognized the Kurds as a cultural people, as a people with their own distinct language and culture. I think big things are happening, Aaron, in the region. We are entering a new era as we speak. I am very worried still about two things. One, the threat posed to Israel by Hamas. I don't think that threat has been completely resolved, and there are continuing attacks from Gaza against the state of Israel. I'm very worried about that part. I am also worried, I should say, about the negotiations with Iran. I understand President Trump wants to resolve the threat posed by the Islamic regime in Iran and help the Iranian people through negotiations. He does not want to get involved in another war in the Middle East. However, as you and I know very well, and this is the part that I worry most about, is that the DNA of that regime is violence, is creating trouble, is oppressing its own people, and creating basically instability and supporting its own proxies, whether it's Hezbollah in Lebanon or Hamas in Gaza or the Houthis in Yemen. And I have to tell you that though President Trump is trying very hard, I don't think anything will come out of negotiating with a regime which does not understand any other language but the language of force.
Yeah.
I am not suggesting we should send troops at all. I'm saying that my policy has always been, as you know very well, and my suggestion is maximum support for the Iranian people and maximum pressure, economic, financial, diplomatic, on the regime in Tehran.
That's right. And I think President Trump is eyes wide open with who he's dealing with. He knows exactly who he's dealing with in Tehran. And maybe at least he can say, look, we tried to be diplomatic, and then continue the maximum pressure campaign. Same thing with the new regime. You know, they traded in their Al-Qaeda outfits for suits, but still troubling leadership in Syria. But again, I think Trump is going into that with eyes wide open as well. You know, I think back to when President Trump was really first jump-starting this Middle East peace process. I was actually still in the Middle East. I remember listening to you having a conversation with our friend Peter Christian in Missoula at the time while I was over in the Middle East, and the media and the Democrats were, oh, Donald Trump is setting the Middle East on fire. And I was like, huh, I just went shopping at a grocery store here in the Middle East, and, everything was fine.
You know what set Middle East on fire was releasing $7 billion to the Islamic regime in Iran and allowing them to sell their oil and gas to China so they can arm Hamas and Hezbollah and Houthis. I think the last 4 years in terms of appeasing the Iranian regime was just a disastrous foreign policy, and it resulted into the October 2023 attacks from Gaza against Israel, which resulted into kidnapping, rape, and murder of so many innocent Israelis. So I think that was the shameful foreign policy, and I'm very happy to see it abandoned.
Yeah, and that's why it was so, that's why one of the saddest things with the 2020, what happened with the shenanigans in the 2020 elections is, and what America lost as a result of COVID-19 and Joe Biden in the White House, was this peace process and so much more, the economy, but Donald J. Trump is quickly moving right back into action to get everything back on track. A couple of minutes to go here before our break here, and then I got another guest, or I'd keep you on, Dr. Mehrdad Kiab, but talk about Russia, China as well in this equation, because that's another big part of what Trump's doing here is, look, America's got to edge out the Russians and the Chinese in that neck of the woods as well, because what Joe Biden did was push the Saudis and the rest of the Gulf states basically into the arms of the Russians and the Chinese.
Yeah, and I think President Trump is doing exactly the right thing to reverse that process. From AI technology to massive investment in infrastructure in Saudi Arabia, if we don't do this, the Saudis and the other Persian Gulf states would move toward a closer alliance with Russia and China, and that would be the last thing we would want to see. But Russia's support for the regime in Iran is still very strong. And that is something we need to think about in terms of negotiating with the regime in Iran. That is, it's a proxy of China and Russia. And as long as China and Russia are behind it and supporting it, I think we will have a tough time convincing Tehran to come around and actually act as a normal state.
You talked about President Trump talking about meeting with and having negotiations with the Iranians. One of the things I found the most interesting was that the Iranians have actually been meeting with the Saudis. I mean, these two are longtime mortal enemies, and even the Iran. I mean, is that how desperate the Tehranian regime is right now, or is there more at play?
No, I think you're completely right. They're desperate. They're isolated. They're hated by their own people overwhelmingly, as you know. They're isolated in the region. Their proxies have been destroyed by Israel, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, and, of course, Houthis in Yemen. And all their wings have been clipped, and now what is left is the regime itself. And I think the regime is tattering again. And, again, my biggest concern is for us not to allow this opportunity to go by the wayside, and use this opportunity to allow the Iranian people to join the peace process, to join the Abraham Accord. I've always talked about moving from Abraham Accord to the Cyrus Accord for Iran and Israel to become closest friends and allies. That's our dream, and I hope it will come true in the next few years.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. One of these days, if Iran is ever free, I'd love to tag along with you and make a trip back there and go visit where you grew up or something. That would just be absolutely incredible. We'll pray for that kind of peace and prosperity.
It would be a great pleasure.
Dr. Kiab, always an honor to have you on this show. Great to have you. Just one of Montana's finest there at the University of Montana. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, sir.
Your morning espresso starts right here. It's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
All the hand-wringing and all the skittishness on Wall Street, all of the overreaction, because Donald Trump did what Donald Trump was elected to do. He ran as a disruptor, one that shatters illusions, and he challenges old ways of doing things, deporting illegal immigrants, building a wall, the Ukraine mineral deal. Everything he does is out of the box, and most everything he thinks about doing is big, like peace in Europe, peace in the Middle East. I know there are people that just want him to fail just so they can say, well, You failed. Well, at least he's in there taking a shot and taking a swing. He's up at bat.
The Sean Hannity Show from coast to coast later today.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. I've added another Burner to my very large collection of defense products. Why? Because Burner just launched their new compact launcher, the smallest, most compact launcher to date, and I'll be taking it with me everywhere I go. It's the same size as a smartphone, allowing you to conceal carry comfortably and with confidence. It fires 400 feet per second with 41 joules per square inch of stopping power. The size is perfect for women who want protection but can't carry a firearm. It's equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition. It's designed to incapacitate an attacker for 30 to 40 minutes. And Burner is legal in all 50 states. There's no background check required. It can be shipped directly to your door. And Burner is trusted by hundreds of police departments and government agencies worldwide. And Burner is proudly American, each unit hand-assembled in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Visit BYRNA.com today, or you can simply try before you buy by finding a Burner dealer and a partner near you. That's BYRNA.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With breaks of sun and some cloudiness today, we'll see some scattered showers, a few thundershowers developing, mainly in the afternoon. High temperature readings will range from the upper 50s to the mid-60s. For tonight, some scattered showers possible early. Temperatures will then drop back off to the upper 30s in Bozeman to the mid-40s in the Billings area. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm weatherology meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, I'll tell you what, we got a great show coming up with Freedom Friday right here on Montana Talks. Gordon Chang, incredible expert on China, very critical of the communist Chinese leadership. Gordon Chang is going to be in Montana very soon with events in Columbus and Miles City. But first, he's going to join us on Montana Talks Friday, kicking off our statewide show, 9 to 10 a.m. right here. We'll take him for as long as we got him, and then we'll get to your phone calls and more right after that. If you need...
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem of the Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlocki.
The halls of the Capitol are empty, the House and Senate chambers are silent, and legislators have all returned home. But the echoes of the 2025 legislative session continue to reverberate throughout the building. And though the legislature may be gone, the governor and his staff are still hard at work, analyzing the last of the bills, deciding which to sign, which to veto, and which to allow to become law without his signature. One of those that he signed on Tuesday was House Bill 682, the Detransitioner's Bill of Rights, a top priority for us, which interestingly claimed the title as the very last bill to be passed by the legislature before they adjourned the session. The bill deals with a growing problem and is one of a series of similar bills that have been passed by legislatures in multiple states. The problem is what to do with the increasing numbers of victims of so-called gender-affirming care who regret having undergone gender transition procedures and want to detransition back to their original gender. Unfortunately, the reality is often a scenario akin to Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Those who want to detransition are quickly realizing that it's a one-way street, both in terms of the procedures themselves, which are often irreversible. How do you undo a double mastectomy? And in terms of the financial resources necessary to detransition. That's because the entire industry, both medical facilities and insurance providers, are focused on only one thing, transitioning. When someone wants to detransition, they throw up their hands and say they don't do that. A perfect example is the case of Abel Garcia, who wanted to become a female. His insurance company paid for breast implants in 2018, and within months, Garcia regretted his decision. In his words, he said, quote, "I had to ask myself, what was I doing? No matter what I was going to do, whether I continued transitioning, whether I took all of the hormones in the world, had every surgery to look as much like a woman, I realized that I would not be a woman. I would just be a man, either cosplaying as a woman or doing a caricature of what I believed a woman was," end quote. When he asked his insurance company to pay for his implant removal, they refused, saying that it was not medically necessary. Garcia was stuck. The same system that was so eager to help him transition turned its back on him when he decided to detransition. This is bad when it happens to an adult. It's even worse when it happens to a gender-confused minor who undergoes irreversible gender-transforming procedures that leave them sterile or physically mutilated. That's why a decision by yet another left-leaning activist judge is so frustrating. This week, Judge Jason Marks of Missoula became the third Montana judge to rule against a legislative ban on irreversible sex change procedures on minors. Over half of the states and entire countries in Europe have now banned these types of procedures on minors because kids are too immature to fully process the long-term consequences of sterility and are therefore unable to give informed consent. Fortunately, the tide is turning. More and more medical professionals are speaking out against these procedures, and victims are coming forward. We applaud Governor Gianforte for signing House Bill 682 so that the victims of so-called gender-affirming care can begin to get the help that they deserve. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlofy reminding you that this government is your government, and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
Yeah, very interesting report there from Jeff Laszlofy. You know, when you think about it, I talked yesterday on the show about how when the Democrats talk about transitioning to kitchen table issues, what they really mean is bringing the knives out to chop body parts off of kids. But isn't that interesting? So the Democrats and their liberal judges in Missoula, they want to break these kids. They want to take, you know, chop their body parts off, give them these life-altering drugs. But then when the kids want to be fixed and they want to be put back together again, the Democrats don't want to fix them and put them back together again. They only want to tear them apart. I mean, isn't that just absolutely insane? But good job, Governor Gianforte, signing it into law.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Perhaps it all just comes down to language. American trade deficits are something many of us aren't proud of, and our current president is determined to address. But what if we called them capital spending surpluses instead? When we buy more goods from a country that they import from us, the net result is that they have more dollars and we have more stuff. What do they do with the money? The answer is buy capital goods from us. In some cases, that's financial capital. Think corporate bonds or federal government debt. Could be real estate capital, or could be physical equipment like shuttle loader facilities in the Golden Triangle. And it's almost certainly equity on Wall Street, ownership shares of businesses large and small. Many of these things are good, or at least they could be, especially if those investments are used to grow businesses here. In the case of the federal borrowing, it's less clear, since debt purchases by foreigners just prop up deficit spending. That capital spending happens here because we remain a good place to invest. I'm Patrick Parkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.